Joe Williams is grinding a chunk of amber glass, making it smooth.
I actually had this old skull, and I really had no clue what to do with, so I was just kind of making impressions, and then casting that over in plaster, silica mix, and then actually casting glass on top of that to get the naked of it, so it looks like these skulls are actually coming through the glass.
Joe is a veteran of the Iraq War. He served for 7 years and was on his way to officer's training when an injury cut short his promising military career. Then a series of surgeries kept him cooped up in bed and severe depression took hold. It was drawing in a sketchbook that helped him find his way back to life. I'm Gina Kaufman. Today, as part of our Veterans Day coverage, KCUR's Central Standard is exploring the role of art in the lives of veterans. For that, artist and former Marine Joe Williams is with us in the studio. Hi, Joe.
Hi, Gina. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for being here. When did you enlist in the military?
I enlisted in 2004. I went to boot camp towards the end of 2004 and graduated at the beginning of 2005. So,
I'm curious about what your thought process was as you enlisted, what you thought it was going to be like.
Well, my recruiter definitely told me a lot of different things. So, when I first initially wanted to join the Marine Corps, I always knew that I had this service to others that I wanted to do. Being, going to Rockhurst High School, they kind of ingrained to you that men for others, mentality. And so actually when I got out of Rockhurst, I wanted to become a firefighter. Went through the fire academy at KCK Community College, and then you have to be 21 to be onto a firehouse to actually get paid, and if you're actually prior active duty, you automatically can get put onto a house once you're done. But that's when I just decided to join the Marine Corps, and once I actually got in and got done with boot camp, I absolutely fell in love with being a Marine, and that's what I knew what I wanted to do for my entire life. So it's kind of a little my driving force of being who I am.
What did you love about it?
The camaraderie. I definitely miss every brother and sister that I made while I was in the Marine Corps. It's such a close-knit family, and the bonds and the experiences that you go through there, whether that's being overseas, being back in the States, really being a part of that family aspect of the Marine Corps really is, what I absolutely love about it.
What exactly did you do in the Marine Corps?
Originally, I started off as aviation ordnance, so I worked on weapon systems for aircraft, primarily EA-6B Prowler and the Harrier jet platforms. I went to Iraq actually being aviation ordnance man and throughout 06 and did some good things while I was there and, got selected for an officer's program. Came back to the States and then I was a weapons instructor for about a year and a half before I classed up to go to officer candidate school.
You had a lot of success in the 7 years you served, but what happened? How did it get cut short?
So originally in 2005, I was stationed in Pensacola, Florida. I was stationed there when Katrina actually hit, and when Katrina was coming in, we were evac'd out to Albany, Georgia. And soon as the hurricane was over, we got right back down to Pensacola where we started to do rescue reliefs between New Orleans and Pensacola. And during that time, it was just kind of one of those accidents where I was stepping off one of the trucks wrong and rolled my ankle and broke it and went to the Navy doctors, and Navy, as wonderful as they are, didn't see everything that was going on in my ankle. And so, they just casted me, sent me on my way, went to Iraq, did a marathon, did a bunch of other stuff where I was running on it. And in 2008, when I was going to officer candidate school, when I was in the in-doc, physical fitness test, I was running and foot locked into place, and that was kind of the end of it for me from there. And then after that happened, it was about 8 surgeries later to get it all fixed up and get me back up on my feet.
What was that like for you? I mean, after 7 years of your identity and sense of purpose being wrapped up and being a Marine and being part of this family.
Yeah, it was something that was extremely difficult for me. I absolutely loved being a Marine. I mean, my original intention was just to do 4 years, but once I got in there and was really part of the family in that loving, you know, kind of chaotic way that the Marines are, I knew I wanted to be a part of that for the rest of my life. I knew I wanted to become a leader of Marines. I knew I wanted to go from enlisted to officer. And, you know, really after my injury happened, it was just devastating. You know, it was absolutely terrible. And since, you know, I remember vividly, you know, sitting in my colonel's office there with the doctor and them being, you know, saying, hey, your Marine Corps career's over. And by the way, we're not sure if you're ever going to be able to walk right again. And that really did have a devastating effect on me. I mean, one, I was losing my identity as a Marine, and the other, I was losing my identity as, you know, physical person of, you know, playing soccer, running and doing all these type of things. So I really felt like a huge part of my life was stripped away. Or was taken away from me. And, you know, it was absolutely devastating. It's, you know, got to the point where I was incredibly depressed. I was suicidal. You know, I didn't know where to go with my life after, you know, this happened. And really, that's where kind of art stepped in with that.
Yeah. How did it occur to you to start keeping a sketchbook at your bedside?
You know, that was something I've kind of always done. Kind of one of those persons where I have really weird dreams and I wake up and just kind of like start sketching. And, you know, it was actually after, I want to say, my fourth surgery, where I had, you know, a bunch of cadaver parts put in. And I was on bed rest for 3 months. And, you know, that was kind of the only thing really to do was, you know, watch TV or watch movies, play video games, and I could sit there, sketch and draw. And, you know, that's really where it started forming up, where I really loved that idea. You know, during my darkest parts, that's when the realization set in that I need to be doing art, that I need to be doing something. You know, it was kind of one of those dark periods where I was just sitting there flipping through my sketch pad, and, you know, every page I went to, I just realized, you know, somehow subconsciously I was taking all this negative emotion and everything that was going on in my life at the time, I was putting it onto paper and putting it into a visual format, and I started noticing things about myself. And, you know, that's what I really loved about always having my sketch pad there. I didn't know what I was doing at the time, and, you know, eventually I finally realized that all this negativity was finally coming out, and, you know, I was able to express myself finally about what was going on in my life.
What do you think, I mean, what had you realized about your life? It sounds like your experience in the military had been really positive. Were you dealing mostly with your experience of being injured and in the hospital and taken out of duty, or was there more?
Yeah, no, it was more of the fact that I felt a lot of things were taken away from me, especially, you know, my time in service. I mean, I absolutely loved to be a Marine, and, you know, having that identity taken away from me, you know, it's just, you know, like when you go back to boot camp, you know, they kind of like strip you down from that civilian size and build you back up into being a Marine. And when they built me back up, it was just something I never thought I was capable of. And that's where I've, you know, was really thriving and excelling in. And just to have that huge portion of your life taken away just really kind of, you know, set everything into motion for me. You know, but the one thing that, you know, having that sketch pad and the art was, what really helped me out was the realization of the fact that my life wasn't over. You know, it was just the end of another, or it was the end of one chapter and, you know, the beginning of another. And, you know, I like to actually think of it as like two completely different books and not even chapters. I just started my own, you know, new life, as a disabled veteran. And, you know, art really helped me come to that realization that my life is going to be okay, that I can be happy and I deserve the right to be happy. And that's what art does for me.
It's really interesting. I mean, why do you think that art of all things had that effect on you? It's more than the distraction of it, like what you could have gotten from watching movies or something. Is it something about the creative process?
Yeah, it definitely is the creative process. And, you know, this is one, you know, I talk to a lot of veterans across the country, you know, about art and how art can positively affect their lives. And the one thing that, you know, that I really do tell them is, you know, art's great for, you know, just the creative process and being able to learn to express yourself, because especially in the Marine Corps and any military service branch, you know, they really break you down from who you thought you were and to build you up to who you are or who they want you to be. Especially the Marine Corps, they teach you, you know, just to destroy, to kill, to do whatever. I mean, you know, you walk around base saying, you know, kill, kill, or, you know, hey there, killer, and that type of thing. And so you kind of get in this mentality of just, you know, seek and destroy type of thing. And when you're getting out of the military, you know, they really don't teach you how to create your own life again or build up a new life after, you know, your service. And that's where really art steps in. And that's where I believe art really helped me out was, you know, especially in the military, you have to be creative in the job fields that you do. You know, the military, whether you think it or not, actually teaches you to be creative, how to complete the mission in difficult situations or something like that. And, you know, just being able to translate that over to art is, you know, a fantastic way of doing it.
In our culture, I feel like there's a tendency to think of art as a special calling that only some people have, that's sort of outside the mainstream. And there's also this idea of military types as tough guys. And we tend to think about art in the opposite way. Can you shed light on the connection between art and that military experience? That it's surprising to me that it would be, yeah, that universal, that veterans could find this kind of connection with art.
Yeah, I always think that's really kind of a funny question. I get emails from veterans, you know, all over the country about, you know, this project and, you know, how I can help them out with art in their daily lives. And, you know, and that's one thing that I tell, or the funny thing that I get from them is a lot of times there's this whole masculinity, you know, about the military, and, you know, they think that art is really this feminine type of thing. And it's kind of funny when I talk to them, I'm like, no, that's not the case at all. And most of these guys, veterans, guys and gals, they don't realize that they're doing art already. I know when I was active duty, everybody that I knew, you know, whether it was a private to our sergeant major to, you know, our colonel, whatever, whoever it was, we were doing some type of creative work to help express ourselves, you know, whether that was doing photography. I know when I was on the rifle range, I used to take the clips that the bullets used to come on, and you could connect them together like, you know, kind of like Lincoln Logs, and I would build little sculptures out of these bullet clips. And, you know, I had buddies that were drawing tattoos. I had people that were writing, and they never realized that they were doing art. And now that I'm out and, you know, working with veterans on art projects, a lot of times when I talk to veterans, you know, most of the time they just need permission to make art. You know, they are like, oh, that's, you know, a little too feminine for me. And it's like, no, it's not. You're already doing it anyways. And so that's where it's just, you know, sitting down with vets and saying, hey, it's okay to make art and to really use art as a tool in your life.
Let's get Eef Ely in on this discussion. He's the conductor of the Lyric Opera Veterans Chorus, performing this afternoon at 1 at the World War I Museum. Good morning, Eef.
Good morning, Gina.
Are Joe's comments resonating with you based on your own work with veterans?
Absolutely. I guess you could summarize, sum up what art really is about, and that's to express. To express every single human emotion of mankind's ever had, from the depths of despair to the heights of ecstasy. Every emotion can be and is being expressed through the various mediums of various arts.
So I guess I'm hearing you saying that it's not just one person's kind of experience, but that there's no experience out there that can't be worked through in some way through art.
That's absolutely right. It always begins with a human experience. When an individual has an experience of any kind, they're compelled to share it. It's just impossible for human beings not to share it with somebody. And so invariably, they begin to share it with words. And if an individual has some talent, they can set those words in some kind of poetic form. And what is so unique and wonderful about that is that poetry compresses as much meaning as possible into as few words as possible. And then the composer picks it up and he says, I can relate to that. I can feel that. Now I'm going to try to enhance that message with music. And Music, of course, goes beyond words, goes beyond language, has a power all of its own. And that's what I think that's what these people are trying to do with the Veterans Chorus. I say these people, the Lyric Opera, really, I'm so pleased that the Lyric Opera has taken charge of this and has really promoted this so that the veterans can come out and express express themselves. And through that expression, of course, we reach the people who are listening, and they also get connected with whatever it is that we're trying to express.
You yourself are not a veteran. How did you get involved in the Veterans Chorus?
Yeah, I didn't. I was not a veteran, and I've always felt kind of guilty about that. And so when they came to me, that is Richard Gibson, he's the one who started this, and Linda Brand with the Lyric. And they started this last year when the Lyric did the opera production called Silent Night, based on the story of World War I, when the German and French and American troops all came out of the trenches and sang Silent Night at Christmas Eve. And they had this idea of developing this chorus of veterans who like to sing and singers who love veterans. And it was so successful last year. And then they brought me on board because Richard had to go to Las Vegas to school. And they brought me on board to see if I would help them develop the choral aspect of it. And I thought, yeah, I haven't been a veteran, and I felt guilty about that. This is my opportunity to help out in a little way.
I hear you've had a rough few years since your retirement from the UMKC Conservatory, and that those experiences have caused you to rethink your own ideas about post-traumatic stress in particular. I mean, after years of working with veterans. Can you start by telling us the story of what happened after you retired?
Yeah, my house burned down. That's the probably was one of the more traumatic things, but that really didn't affect me so much emotionally. Losing everything that you've collected for 53 years, it was that evening after the fire, my daughter-in-law prepared a nice, wonderful dinner, and we were all sitting around there, my grandkids and my children. And I thought to myself, it's only after I lost everything I thought I needed that I really still have everything that I need. But then my wife got very ill, and she passed away, and I kept her at home and had to take care of her, dropped out of music for a couple of years. And yes, it does something to you, but life goes on, as they say, and I'm sort of developing a new life for myself now. And the University of Nebraska asked me to come up as an interim this year. So this kind of put me back into music and what I used to do, and I'm feeling alive again.
Joe, in a way, this does kind of have some resonance with your experience, just having one life and having to sort of quickly adjust to a whole new reality.
Yeah, no, it really does. You know, and that's kind of, you know, what a lot of people go through traumatic experiences, what happens to them is how to be able to move on, how to be able to gather yourself back up and to really live, you know, a quality life after those experiences. You know, and that's just the great way about being a human being, you know, just like you've said about art, it's just a way for you to express yourself, and you're naturally going to do it. And especially after traumatic events or anything like that, I think your creative process starts to begin to flow a little bit more, you know, and just in the sense of it's a necessity for what your body needs, for what your mind needs. So I think we naturally gravitate towards doing something creative and to be, you know, to get ourselves happy again.
Eve, what do you understand about trauma now that maybe you didn't before? I mean, yeah.
I'm not sure I've worked my way through all of that. I do know that you look around and there isn't a human being that hasn't had to endure a certain amount of suffering. And we know, of course, that perseverance develops character. Character develops hope. And so you cannot really develop character, I don't think, without perseverance. And sometimes we're in that state of persevering, and we just have to hang on to that with an element of hope. And then we realize that life really in the end is very beautiful.
How did you reconnect with your own life? I mean, was music a big part of that?
Music is huge. Music has always been a part of me. I think most musicians, when they're given this particular gift, have that song going on in their brain. Sometimes I'd like it to stop, and you just can't. It's just there. It certainly is a gift, just as the gift that Joe is talking about. I guess that's one of the things in life that we want to discover is what are our gifts, and then to follow along that line and make use of that gift. And that's what gives us our purpose, makes us recognize what our purpose is, and allows us to carry on.
When you work with veterans to express themselves through music, what do you think it is about music that's so therapeutic for them?
Music has a power of its own. That's something that a lot of people don't recognize. Well, I think everybody recognizes that the power of music, but unfortunately we have so many noise inventors out there today who are creating music which is really designed to bring out the worst in man. And people like myself and other educated musicians, we really try to reintroduce people to the music that is designed specifically to bring out the best in man. And that's the music that we're going to be doing today, this afternoon, at the World War I Museum. It's patriotic, yes, but it's music that's designed to bring out the best in us.
You know a little bit about the history of how people have thought about music and its relationship to the emotions and trauma. Can you walk us through a little bit of that?
Well, it's a really huge subject. Let's see.
Are there some favorite thoughts that stand out to you just from your readings and studies over time?
Yes, I would say that for me, music was always a part of my life, even as a little child growing up. And I was born in the middle of Nebraska on a farm and didn't ever think I had the opportunity to go into music. But I had a mentor who came into our yard, talked my papa into allowing me to come to school, and told me to major in music. And I started playing the tuba in the band, string bass in the orchestra, sang in the chorus. And so it was always it was my life. It was extremely important, but it's not just people who are in music that need music. Every single human being needs it. Every single human being needs art. And when we think about art in itself, we have to realize that every single item human beings have touched is a work of art, because everything outside of God's nature has first been created by someone's imagination. And that's what I think is just really significant in life, is to open ourselves to that realization, and then we find beauty everywhere.
Joe, what do you think about this from the standpoint of visual art and working specifically yourself as a veteran and with other veterans on visual art as a way to reconnect with life after service?
Yeah, you know, I think, you know, it goes along with any arts as well, but, you know, definitely with visual arts, you know, there's a lot of veterans out there that have a hard time putting together the right words and being able to communicate with others, you know, they're with themselves, with their families, with society. You know, it's hard for them to tell their experiences, to be in a safe, you know, environment to where they can talk about these types of stories and really their traumatic experiences. And really what visual arts do is really help veterans, you know, express themselves in a safe environment. They're, you know, able to put their traumatic experiences into a work of art and to really be able to express themselves on there. And, you know, once, you know, that whole creative process of why they're making the art, you know, really comes and brings a lot of light to, you know, their own experiences. I built this one sculpture that had to deal with my PTSD, and it was this modern atlas. And, you know, I always felt like I had the weight of the world on my shoulders and all this. And when I got done with the piece, you know, I really had no intention of making this about post-traumatic stress.
But there it was.
Yeah, but there it was. You know, when I got out of it, you know, when I got done with the piece, you know, I, you know, left the head missing, and, you know, this globe was on there. And when I looked at this piece and I realized that I didn't fill in the globe or anything like that, that it was just all in my head, that, you know, that life can still move on. And that's where it really resonated for me about how important visual art is, because once I made that piece, I was really able to start talking about my experiences. I was able to use that piece to talk with others about my experiences, you know, my traumatic situations and all that type of stuff. And I think that's what's really important about the arts, is it gives you a safe area to talk about the things that you might be normally afraid of talking about in a normal situation. So I think that's what's so great about art in general, is, you know, you're able to push yourself out beyond your comfort zone and, you know, being able to tell the story that you want to tell.
Thinking about that issue of things that you might be uncomfortable to talk about in just casual conversation, we'll be switching gears shortly to talk about how civilians interact with veterans around what they've experienced. And Eef, I'm wondering, as someone who has not served in the military but who works with veterans a lot in a really personal way, has your comfort with those kinds of interactions evolved in any way?
Yeah, I think so, because I think I can relate to them at a human, on a human level. I think that they have had a very significant purpose in their lives in wanting to defend this country. I mean, looking at a very broad picture, going beyond themselves and doing something for the nation, for others, like Joe said so eloquently about being able to do things for, or having a purpose of wanting to serve a higher cause than just themselves. And of course, I look at music in the same way. When we examine what's happening in most of our schools, most of the activities are geared toward competition, really beating the other guy, bashing the other guy's head in. Whereas music is the one thing that brings us all together. As an ensemble, we stand up and we tell the community, this is how you're supposed to live. We're supposed to harmonize one with another. We're supposed to not only move together and feel together, but think together. And this is a beautiful thing. And when several ensembles get together, then we represent several different communities. And communities are supposed to harmonize with one another. So looking at the broader perspective of things, that's why music is the kind of art that brings people together. And it's best served when people work together.
Do you say thank you for your service when you meet a veteran?
Absolutely, I do. And I see that happening so much lately. I don't remember seeing that earlier years, but I think in the last few years, I step on a plane, and when I see a serviceman getting on the plane, the people burst into applause. But I also see it, you know, at the train station.
Eef Ely, conductor of the Lyric Opera Veterans Chorus, thank you so much for sharing your story with us.
Thank you, Gina.
The Lyric Opera Veterans Chorus, which we're hearing now, is performing today at 1 at the World War I Museum. When we return, how veterans feel when you thank them for their service. Join that conversation at 816-235-2888. We'll be right back. I'm Gina Kaufman. Welcome back to KCUR's Central Standard. You may have noticed that it's Veterans Day, a day when civilians take time to remember that there's an entire population out there that's actively served and serving in this country's war efforts. But sometimes attempts to close the distance between veterans' experience of war and the civilian experience just fall flat. It's hard to know how to start that conversation. What most people say is thank you for your service. If you're a veteran or currently active in the military, we'd love to hear what you think of that phrase. Call 816-235-2888. We'd also love to hear from civilians about what they're trying to communicate when they use it. 816-235-2888. Joe Williams, the former Marine who started an art therapy program for veterans, is still with us from the last segment. Hi again, Joe.
Hi.
We're also joined by Melanie Gilliland, who works with wounded service members. She's a veteran as well. Thanks for being here, Melanie.
Thanks for having me.
We've heard a little bit about Joe's background in the military. Melanie, what's your story? When and how did you serve?
I joined the military when I was 17, back in 1995. Served in both the Army and Air National Guard, and a total of 3 years of active duty service with combat experience as well, support. I worked various duty locations and positions to include services and mortuary affairs and protocol, and seen the world and seen many different places.
You know, I'm wondering how you feel when people thank you for your service. Do people do that a lot, first of all?
Not so much, probably because of my age and my gender, but when they do, I used to be taken back a little. Now, after working with severely wounded service members and going to the VA as a patient and being around veterans of all ages and service branches and so forth, it's really humbled me, and I have to say back to them, thank you. It was an honor and privilege, because with all sincerity, it truly was. The military provided me so many opportunities that I would have never been presented throughout my life, and I served with, I'd have to say, America's finest. I preserve so many of those relationships still to this day and cherish them. Not only that, I see veterans of so many generations, all the way from World War II at the VA to today's generation, and I get can't be more grateful than serving amongst those and being thankful.
You said that you used to be sort of taken aback when people said it to you at first. What do you mean by that? Taken aback in what way?
Not knowing how to respond to that.
To being thanked?
Yeah. It's a volunteer service today. Back during Vietnam, it was a draft era. Today, I felt like I volunteered for my service, so I didn't really necessarily need to be thanked for my service. However, doing what I do now without the support of the community and my family being gone on the frequent basis that I was gone, they couldn't have done it without the support of the community. So it's a true honor to say thank you back to them, because without that support and dialogue today, our veterans could not go through the healing process. Our families could not be a family unit without the support of those communities as well. So it is a thank you and an honor back to them.
Joe Williams, what about you? How do you feel when people say thank you for your service?
I really don't have a problem with it. You know, I'm grateful for it, and, you know, the recognition of, some of the sacrifices that, I've made in my own life. It's definitely appreciative. It's kind of the same way, in the beginning I was taken aback by it too. Somebody would thank me for my service, and, I'd definitely, thank you, and I appreciate your comments and, all that. But it kind of developed over time. You know, and that's something that I noticed. I mean, we've been in the longest war, you know, in American history. And I think kind of over time, you know, especially now, it kind of gets a little bit whitewashed a little bit. I know I can talk. I've talked to some people where it's just, you know, it feels like it's just a formality for them to say it to me. You know, I walk around with a cane and all this. And so, you know, I kind of hear it quite a bit. But, you know, I can hear the people that are extremely sincere about it and those that are just, you know, kind of going through the motions of it. But you know, those that are sincere about it, I can tell, and, you know, it definitely brings, you know, gives me a little bit of goosebumps every single time of, you know, I'm proud of what I did and what I went through and the sacrifices that I made. So, you know, thank you for those that are sincere about it.
Let's talk with some of our callers. We've got Danny and Independence on the line. Hi, Danny.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. How about you?
Good. Good. Did you want to ask a question first?
Oh, well, I just, are you calling to talk about how you feel when people say thank you for your service?
Yeah, and I had spoken earlier with one of the producers, and I think what the rest of the panel is talking about is spot on. I was a sergeant in the Marine Corps, and it feels nice when people thank you and thank other veterans, and it's much appreciated. But lately, I've been thinking of the words of President Kennedy, and he said, "As we express our gratitude, we must never forget that the highest appreciation is not to utter words, but to live by them." And what I'd really like to see is more action from Congress to address some of these concerns that we're seeing charitable organizations try to do, such as the homelessness problem among veterans, the suicide rate among veterans, the lack of health care and mental health care for our veterans. So those are some of the thoughts that I had.
Well, thank you so much for calling us, Danny.
All righty, thank you.
What do you think about maybe the limitations of words in situations like these?
Yeah, and simplify, by the way, brother. You know, I definitely think there's limitations for this. You know, I think, you know, the civilians that really are appreciative, I think there's just kind of this little awkward situation, because I've been in, like, definitely awkward positions where, you know, somebody's come up to me and, like, thank me for my service, and then, you know, they want to be able to sit there and ask me questions about my service, my experiences and all that. And, you know, and some of the questions can go a little bit overboard of what they're asking me or what I really want to tell.
Really? Like what? I mean, that maybe their questions are pointed or...
No, like, how many people have you killed? Have you ever killed anyone? You know, it's kind of really weird experiences. Like, have you ever, you know... kind of gets into real graphic and morbid type of, you know, they want to hear about those stories and, you know, you really just met the person type of thing. And yeah. And so you definitely have these kind of like awkward conversations every once in a while. And so, you know, I have to agree with, you know, the caller about this is we have awkward situations, but the community wants to be involved with veterans' lives and making their lives better. And sometimes it has to go beyond those thank you and whatnot. You know, it needs to go into participating in their lives and, you know, doing something to help them out and really being a part of it. You know, if you want to be able to talk to veterans about what they're doing, get to know them for a while. Then things will be able to start to come out and, you know, things will start getting better.
KCUR's Central Standard has to take one more break. We'll get right back to our discussion about thanking veterans for their service in a minute. Welcome back to Central Standard. I'm Gina Kaufman. It's Veterans Day, and something a lot of veterans are probably hearing today, even more than usual, is thank you for your service. If you're a veteran, there's still just a little time to let us know how you feel about that expression, 816-235-2888. I'm here with Joe Williams, who served as a Marine in the Iraq War, and Melanie Gilliland, who spent a combined 14 years in the Army and Air National Guard. Hi again, Joe.
Hello.
And great to have you, Melanie.
Thanks for having me.
You know, I was just surprised to hear that sometimes when people follow thank you for your service with a bunch of questions, that can be the most uncomfortable part, because What I was thinking might be a limitation of thank you for your service is that there's really only one answer. I mean, you're welcome or thank you for your support, or that it doesn't really invite you to share much of your experience. I'm surprised that questions can be uncomfortable like that. Do you share that experience, Melanie?
I do, especially when people ask what I did. And after being deployed, people ask, they just assume having an MOS and services. And
what is MOS?
My primary skill set, my job, being services, and I was protocol in mortuary. Well, it's funny, you don't do mortuary affairs all day long. That's just a small focus of what your job was. And people will ask, did you do this? I mean, gruesome questions, not appropriate even for TV.
So it's not that they're asking questions, it's that the questions are sort of sensationalizing your experience.
Absolutely. And I hate to direct and point any blame, but a lot of it is the media sensation, I believe, on the war and what war is. And I try to even instill that principle in my daughter. If you're approaching a veteran, be sensitive to their experiences, because you don't know what's going through that veteran's mindset, where they're at in their healing process as well.
Let's talk to John, calling us from Overland Park. Hi, John.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining the conversation.
Yeah, I was a Marine in Vietnam with 2 years of fairly intense combat, and I experienced, like many others did, many horrors and carnage that I really wanted to forget. And I think the listening public may not appreciate and understand what life was like coming back from the war then as opposed to now. We were considered to be baby killers, and the thing I wanted to do mostly was to forget what I'd done and just go underground because I didn't want anybody to know. And I stayed that way until the last couple of years when people begin to say thank you for your service. And at first, their gratuity really was a point of resurrecting all the bad things that I wanted to forget. It was a trigger. I've kind of gotten over that now, but I think my point of view on thank you for your service really needs to be backed up by substance. It's nice for people to acknowledge you, but the fact of the matter is there are thousands and thousands of vets out there on the street that have no support, and I think it'll probably just stay that way so long as the American public doesn't understand and Congress just ignores us.
John, is there something that specific about your experience that you would like people to understand that the thank you for your service conversations don't give you the opportunity to say?
No, I don't want to say anything about it.
That's what it sounds like.
Some of the others have commented. Talking about things that were that horrible does not do me any good. Last night there was a documentary on veterans of Iwo Jima, and these guys experienced horrors as well, and they are still living with the residue of that. And you could see by the conversations that were ensuing in that program just how terribly uncomfortable and devastated they were to even think about it.
Yeah. Well, thanks for your call, John, and I wonder if some of our guests can comment. This is the second time we've heard that there needs to be more substance. What do you think that would look like?
Yeah, I think there's a lot more that we can do with veteran-wise. I know a lot of post 9/11 veterans, we have a difficult time with the VA, just with all the scandals and everything else that happens. And definitely the VA is kind of stuck in this kind of archaic way of thinking about things. I mean, just looking at the Kansas City VA, it was built in the 50s and still run like it's in the 50s.
What do you mean by that? In what way?
You know, I mean, the building is still the way it was in the 50s. And, you know, it's just the administration staff. I can say that all my doctors and nurses are fantastic, but there's just so many loopholes and so many red tape that you have to go through just to get something done or get a, you know, to see a specialist or just to do whatever. You know, it's just a lot of red tape to go through. But I think definitely now with, you know, post 9/11 veterans, they want something a little bit more than what the VA has to offer. I know, especially with me and a lot of the veterans that I work with, is we want something more alternative. You know, we just don't want to go to the VA and be force fed medications and go through these really formal support groups. When we knew that alternative care programs are doing better, you know, whether that's doing art therapy or, you know, acupuncture or deprivation tanks or something like that. You know, there's definitely these alternative care practices that are definitely helping veterans out more than, you know, just getting medication and, you know, talking about these or having these formal support groups. Because a lot of the times, you know, when I've been to these formal support groups, it's, you know, I'm worse leaving than I was showing up there. And, you know, by doing alternative programs and, you know, doing different things that, you know, allows you to be creative and whatnot, I think truly helps out a veteran a lot more than, you know, what they have to offer right now.
We had a caller mention that political support, I think for veterans specifically, not necessarily for any particular combat cause abroad, but that was important. But I do wonder if part of, if thank you for your service is something that can ever sound like it's serving someone else's agenda or someone else's cause, because, you know, I assume veterans have every political point of view, a wide range of perspectives on war itself. And yeah, I wonder if someone else's perspective can sometimes color those conversations.
I would have to say, I believe it does. When you put that uniform on, though, as a service member, you take that oath and vow to serve your country regardless of your political belief, your belief system. But coming home and returning to that spectrum, and somebody says and extends a thank you, you have that almost street smart, sixth sense, whatever notion you want to relate it to, if they're genuine and sincere about it. If they're not sincere, you're going to pick up on it pretty quick. And the caveat on that is, if the vet goes to respond and want a dialect in a small conversation, how are you going to react to that? Are you going to be open to having a conversation? Are you ready for that? A lot of times, and this has come with maturity, working around veterans of all generations, that you may not be ready or open to their political beliefs, their experiences. Just if you're going to open that door, be ready for it, is what I tell people, and be sincere.
Yeah, there's I've worked with, you know, a few senators, you know, in regards to, you know, an art project and, you know, this whole type of art therapy program. But, you know, there's definitely some senators out there that I've talked to that have sat down, want to have got to know me and, you know, really are sincere about hearing my stories and, you know, truly, you know, a veteran's perspective on how we can make the VA or make, you know, ourselves better. Because, you know, there's a thing in the veteran community that vets are only going to help vets out. And that's really what it is now. Veterans still have this service to each other. And that's why a lot of veterans get out and they go to nonprofit groups. They go to other veteran organizations to start running those. But in talking with, you know, senators and all that type or all those type of people, you know, I can tell those that are just putting their name behind it and those that are really sitting down and listening to what we have to say and what we really would like to see. And that's what I would just like to see branch out to everybody else is, you know, that sincerity of being able to listen and to hear our voices and being able to do that.
That's all the time we have for this morning's conversation, but keep this conversation going on Twitter. We're at KCURCST. Add your thoughts there. Joe Williams, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
And Melanie Gilliland, it's been great getting to know you and your story. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
To listen back to today's show, go to kcur.org/Central Standard later today. We'll have it there for you to listen to. And think about subscribing to our podcast while you're there. That way, all these shows will come right to you, whether you're able to listen at 10 or not. kcur.org/centralstandard tomorrow, Hunting in the Environment. KCUR's Central Standard is produced by Matthew Long Middleton and Sylvia Maria Gross. I'm Gina Kaufman. Up to Date is next. Don't miss it.